It's the WNKY South Central Kentucky Weather Weekly with WNKY TV meteorologists Cody Bailey and Christy Stewart.
Thank you, Kirk. And that's right. It is time for the big one, episode 25 of WNKY Weather Weekly. We are recording this on a Wednesday, valid from the 14th of March, beginning on Thursday, release day for our podcast. And the information we share with you today will be valid through next week, the 21st of March. I'm meteorologist Cody Bailey.
And I'm meteorologist Christy Stewart.
So hard to believe, 25 weeks.
I know.
It's not just a number. That's how many weeks.
25 weeks. I can't believe that we have already been doing it for that long.
Yeah, I think we had a couple people when we were at the 12-week mark or so, like, oh, it's already been like months. And now it's like, man, we're like deep into this now.
We are a quarter of the way to mile marker 100.
Yes, that's right. Man, time flies, and we are going to be talking about several kind of quick-hitting topics today, I guess. I was just about to say we're kind of going into the deeper, warmer months now, and we're going to be talking about the first day of spring, which is just around the corner. Our forecast obviously consisting of some more spring-like and March-appropriate temperatures for at least the next few days. We'll get to that later. And then we'll also be talking about the recent loss of sleep, also known as daylight saving time. And we'll also discuss the role of the storm spotter, because if you've watched our forecast, I know last week we mentioned some of those classes that have occurred around the area, so we'll just kind of talk about the importance of spotters and the role they play, and if you're interested, how you can become one as well. So
and
a
you
pretty
were,
good topic.
Yeah, and you were able to go to the spotter class, so that was good.
It was interesting, you know, kind of a behind-the-scenes look. We were planning, I guess, in an ideal world, and you know, plans always change in the news world. So we were planning originally to do a live weather forecast from the location of the Bowling Green class, which, if you remember, was held this past week at the Ag Expo Center in Bowling Green. But plans changed. We had some staffing switching around the station. I say that on my forecast all the time. So it just wasn't going to work out to do a live forecast. So I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to make it because it started at 6:30, and obviously our half-hour 6 o'clock news ends at 6:30. So it was thankfully not far away. I think I got there in about 8 minutes.
Oh, that's not bad.
They were already speaking when I got there, but according to some people there, they said that they had gotten off to a little bit of a later start than they anticipated. So I guess really I got there basically at the beginning. So
that's good.
That was nice. I was just talking to you before we started recording that it was a full house and they were not expecting that many people. As I got there, I was standing for a couple minutes before they brought in a new load of chairs to go through. So that was encouraging to see that many people, not just attending, but you know what they're attending. It was very cool to see that many people interested in the weather and interested in becoming a storm spotter. But
I'm surprised too, because I was expecting maybe 20, 30 people, but you said that there's probably close to maybe 100.
Yeah, I didn't take the time to count, but you know, they had, man, just off the top of my head, probably 7 rows or so of long tables across the room. And then it was kind of a U-shape in the back against the wall where we were kind of standing room only. So, I would guess probably close to maybe 75 to 100. It was
a good number.
Pretty packed. A lot of them were, you know, people who I believe are supposed to be certified like that. You know, there were some volunteer fire departments there from around the region, other emergency management from surrounding counties. I know we had people from Edmondson County and Metcalf County were there.
Okay.
I know I saw some of the Plano Fire Department were there in attendance as well, and you know they could be certified and relay that as you know first responders and law enforcement. So, but there was a lot of people in the public too that were.
Yeah, there. It's also a good refresher course if you've already taken it, like we talked about before.
And I was gonna say that was kind of my reason to go too. Of course, we were, like I said, I'm planning on doing some coverage there to begin with. But as I mentioned, you know, there's I feel like it's a little bit, you know, I was trying to weigh the options in my head. You know, you take these online classes, and that's more of a thorough learning environment when you take these online spotter classes that you don't necessarily get when you go in person. But there are a lot of things that you get in these in-person classes that you don't get from the online training. So it was still very informative. It was a lot of safety-based information as well, and some things that were kind of astounding. You know, a lot of people there, and the guy, Joel Silverman, who was leading the class, he's one of the meteorologists at the National Weather Service in Louisville. He had mentioned, you know, a lot of you maybe, you know, the first thing you think when you think of storm spotting is thunderstorms and tornadoes. But, you know, in terms of relaying life-saving information, he said, especially here in Kentucky, our top weather concern is flooding. And obviously we've had a lot of that for the last month. And he said we're already up to, I think, 2 fatalities this year because of flooding. But it was also that none of those fatalities were during the actual rain event. They happened 2 to 3 days after, which to them was an indication that, you know, it was one of those situations of maybe people driving around the high water signs or road closed barricades. So that was kind of a big lesson in the class that I was at too, that, you know, it's a lot of times it's flooding, not the storms, but also with flooding, it's not necessarily during the rain part of it. And this was, you know, 2 to 3 days afterwards. So I just kind of stressed that as well. But, you know, it just got me thinking. I'm trying to plan a story in the near future on the importance of spotters and what exactly they are. And I did get to talk with emergency management and the National Weather Service within the last week about, you know, how important they are. Because, you know, even us on air, I remember back in the summer, I believe, we had a severe weather event where, you know, we're seeing things on radar, but there's, you know, there's nothing absolute about the radar. It's kind of an estimate. It's sometimes a delay, but there's nothing beats having the ground truth and basically your boots on the ground as those storm spotters, because they're on the surface. They're not, you know, if you're not familiar with the physics of the radar, the further away that you get from a radar beam, the higher up it goes and the higher up the scans are. So, you know, especially, for instance, the radar site in Nashville, you know, that's 60 miles away or so from Bowling Green. So by that point, you know, it's a little bit higher off the ground, so it's not getting super close to the ground. So that's why we need spotters to see what exactly, you know, is what we're seeing on radar actually happening on the ground, or is that happening inside the storm up above? Right. So spotters play a vital role in confirming or denying, I guess, what we're seeing on radar. And
especially in tornadoes, that's when it's most important, I feel like, for those immediate responses. I mean, obviously, if you aren't outside, then don't go outside to see anything. Yeah. But if you happen to be, you know, on the road driving through and you happen to see, oh, there's a funnel cloud forming, that's always good to report and things like that. But yeah, a lot of times, like with the whole radar thing, you can see rotation within clouds, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to drop a tornado. Storm chasing, we've seen that plenty of times where it doesn't actually drop a tornado, or the rotation is just enough to create a funnel cloud, but it doesn't actually reach the ground. So again, that's always helpful to have some eyes on the ground to help with that. And same thing with hail. I mean, we can see on our radar scans, you know, oh, it looks like there's probably hail here, but how big is the hail? I mean, that makes a big difference too.
And they also talked about our Mesonet program here in Kentucky, how that's kind of like, you know, computerized spotters, I guess, because they used, for example, and we actually had this most recent chance of severe weather this past weekend, where, you know, I was looking at some of the wind data on radar, and it looked on the radar pretty, you know, looked like it was pretty windy. But, you know, whether it was the spotters on the ground or, as I mentioned, these Mesonet locations who have wind sensors that they can see kind of real time, they can, you know, see right away, are these winds reaching the ground too? So, you know, what looked like could easily be a severe thunderstorm warning on paper, essentially on the radar data, you know, that we had the data on the ground that showed that it wasn't severe type winds at the surface. So, you know, that those help too. And they, you know, they kind of praise that we are very lucky in Kentucky to have a system like the Mesonet that is more, you know, I guess robust. There's more, not big gaps in data. You know, I feel like most counties, there are several that don't have a location, but there are pretty much most counties across Kentucky have at least one sensor in their county that, you know, kind of keeps along a line of storms going west to east. We can kind of follow that along with all the locations that are there. So those are kind of like robotic spotters, I guess. But,
yeah, there you go.
Spotters are vitally important. You know, they relay the information to the Weather Service, and we have mentioned a couple times on our severe weather coverage about the National Weather Service chat program that is on there. So we log on and we can see essentially in real time the communication between whether it's ham radio operators or just your general storm spotters or law enforcement, we can see the reports that they are relaying in essentially real time, and then we can relay those over the air as well and reach our audience, which is a lot of people, up to, you know, the potential of thousands of people at one time. We can give that information away. And they mentioned that as well, you know, when they are busy getting ready for a warning, because, you know, their system there, it's not just, you know, they issue the warning and it's out. It's, you know, they have to draw the polygon, the warning, what they want. They have to type up the information in it. And then they sent, yeah, I think he told us it's anywhere from when they decide to issue the warning, it's up to a 2-minute process from when they, you know, draw the warning to when it's sent out over the, you know, weather radios and siren networks. So that's what he also said, that the weather service chat room is important for us, because they'll go ahead and tell us, mm-hmm. you know, I think we've seen a lot of times where they'll say, you know, he gave the example of, you know, if there's a warning, a severe storm warning in Logan County, they can go ahead while they're working on it, tell the broadcasters in the chat room, hey, we're thinking about, you know, this is going to go tornado warning here in a couple minutes. So we can mention that on air before it is even
right.
officially a tornado warning and give people advance notice. So stuff like that, the technology and the importance of spotters, just vitally important for everybody in the weather community, but especially for us. I know that we've used, we had a guy who was in Grayson County kind of following a storm one night as it approached Hart County, and we were, you know, saying, you're seeing rotation on radar, but we have a spotter on the storm who is saying that he can see the rotation, but it's not, you know,
Forming, really, right, organized,
it's not reaching the ground. So spotters, yeah, are vitally important.
And to go back to your point about how it takes a delay between when they say that they're going to issue it, between the time that they make that, and then between the time that you also realize it takes a couple minutes for us, once we get that information, to make our graphics and update that and post to social and all that other stuff. So, I mean, by that time, you are talking probably like a 5-minute delay, which, if it's a tornado warning and you have a tornado on the ground, that's vital time. So again, that's where the spotters come into play. But yeah, I mean, that's why we have the chat room, so we can also start working on those graphics when they're working on their graphics and updating things like that. But obviously, anytime that we can get a report on the ground, that's a lot more vital information to know what's happening.
Exactly. And there's I had a couple of storm chaser spotter friends from Alabama when I worked in Indiana, and they'd given me examples of, and I'd seen videos of, you know, some TV stations in Alabama where they had either photos or videos of maybe a funnel cloud or a wall cloud that a storm that wasn't warned at all, and they made the decision to go ahead and go on air even with no warning. And they had said, you know, this will likely be tornado warned soon, but we're starting our coverage now because we see right here.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting as well. You know, a lot of stations, their policy is you don't go on until there's an actual warning. And
right.
you know, they kind of made that call to go ahead and go on air. So as I mentioned, those two classes that we had locally were already past us. But you can become a certified storm spotter any time of the year because of those online courses as well. And if you go to weather.gov/LMK, that there should be a link towards the top that directs you to the 2019 spotter class locations. And within that page, you can also find a link to the online storm spotter, which is through COMET, C-O-M-E-T. It's the kind of online meteorology portal, I guess. And there's a bunch of different exams and courses, mini courses you can take, but that's where they host the online spotter certification. So just because you missed the class doesn't mean you missed your opportunity to become a spotter. You can take those. So,
yeah.
And those are, like I said, a lot of information there. Roughly about the same time as the in-person classes. They take about 2 hours to complete. And, you know, at the end of the day, you get your little certificate there and your official Skywarn storm spotter.
You can frame it and everything.
Exactly. They do look cool.
Right, exactly. And we are thinking of, at the station as well, starting a little spotter network within the station that has not taken off yet, but always good if you're interested in that. You can always shoot us an email too at weather@wnky.com, and we can give you more information on that, as well as, you know, just, it's always good just to know that information, I feel like, and become a spotter. But yeah.
Yeah. So we are obviously getting into that time of the year with, we've already had our severe weather awareness week. It's feeling more like spring. We've already, I mean, even in February, we had a couple of severe weather potential events, so
and another one coming up.
Not something uncommon.
Or past, depending on what you're thinking.
Yeah. So spring is here, 'tis the season. I know that we meteorologists have been in spring for a couple weeks now with the, and we mentioned I think last week's episode or maybe the week before how meteorological seasons are a little bit before the equinox or the solstice, depending on what time of the year. But
yeah, we like to break up our seasons evenly. Yeah.
We like a clear cut.
Yes.
To keep our records and all that. Kind of our next rounds of topics, kind of related. We've got some events coming up. We've got some events that have already happened. Of course, as I mentioned earlier, your times have already changed with daylight saving. But spring, just around the corner. And again, depending on when you're listening to this, it could be maybe
that
the first
true.
Day of spring.
So yeah, so spring, that is actually the vernal equinox. So the technical start to spring is when we have the sun passing over the equator. And so with spring, that means that we now have the northern hemisphere tilted toward the sun. So that's when we're going to be getting those longer days, nice warmer temperatures, things like that. So the vernal equinox happens Wednesday, March 20th. So again, depending on when you're listening to this, it might already be spring. it officially occurs at 4:58 p.m. But the funny thing is that the equinox means equal night. So on the equinox, you should be having 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of nighttime. But on Wednesday, we are actually going to be having a little bit more daylight already. So we're looking at 12 hours of and 8 minutes of daylight. And we are actually having that equal night where we have the 12 hours of daylight on March 17th, which is going to be St. Patrick's Day. But the reason for that time difference, why it's not equal night on the vernal equinox, is because of the way that the Earth is tilted and such like that. But yeah, so finally headed towards those longer days, and it's going to be getting nicer, I would say.
I would hope, at least.
Yes, yeah. Hopefully. Hopefully we can say goodbye to winter officially then.
Yeah, so if you're scheduling your equinox parties, you got 4:58 on Wednesday. So there you go.
Yeah, so you can officially toot the horns. And
I will say it has been very nice. I don't know how it is, what the biggest difference is for you in the morning shift, but for the evening, you know, our dinner break begins after the newscast, 6:30 to 6:40-ish, and it's been so nice this week to walk out the studio when it's not been cloudy and see sunlight. It's, you know, it's that reminder, like, oh, you know, this takes me back to last year, the winter or the summer months, and coming outside and the sun shining bright and all. So it's been, yeah, it's been refreshing.
See, I'm the opposite.
I know that sunrise has been...
I know. See, I got used to it. It didn't happen too long for like maybe a week. Uh-huh. We got to see this nice sunrise on the sky cam as I'm doing the morning show. And now we're back to darkness. And I get to say, hey, guys, when the sun comes up, this is what you'll be looking at. But, you know, I mean, see, being on the morning shift, I used to be a fan of this because we'd have longer daylight, and I like daylight, but being on the morning shift, I have to say I'm not quite a fan.
Yeah, it does take some getting used to, for sure, at least on the early side of it. And now we're gonna, you know, like the sky cam for me for the 6 o'clock is still bright, shiny sun when that is what it looked like during the 5 o'clock newscast. And obviously now, as we go deeper into the spring and into the summer, it's gonna be bright until, you know, 8 o'clock. So
that's all right. I'll get my sky cam brightness again soon once we start increasing those daylight hours some more. I mean, now it seems like we're increasing by about 2 minutes a day.
Yeah, it's a pretty rapid change.
Yeah. So
I noticed that updating one of my sunrise time graphics, and I was like, really? Wow. I just updated this yesterday, and I'm changing like 2 minutes worth. It's,
yeah.
But hey,
crazy.
It is.
Not complaining.
No, not at all. And going back to the equal night, I know you mentioned that it was on Sunday the 17th, which, as you mentioned, is St. Patrick's Day. And I will start off by saying I am kind of glad that it's on a Sunday and not a weekday, because, as you may know, that we cannot, at least in an ideal situation, we can't celebrate because
I know
we'll go invisible on the green
screen. I was just thinking about that the other day. I was like, you know, I wish that we had St. Patrick's Day on a weekday so I could talk about all the little fun weather facts. But then I was like, you know what? No, because I can't wear green. So I don't know how that would work out.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I'll go for like these holiday themed ties and stuff, you know, for weather. And I'm like, I've got a Christmas tie. You know, there's different colors I'll use. I got some blues for like, kind of a winter type of tie, so I use those. And then I see all these St. Patrick's Day decorations and clothing items at the store, and I'm like, I'd love to, but I can't.
Maybe we'll just pretend it's like Halloween combined, and then we'll wear green, but we'll turn invisible, disappear, and then, you know.
So on a Sunday this year, I can appropriately wear some green.
And not get pinched.
And not get pinched or go invisible. So the best of both worlds.
You know what? We don't show our feet on air. We could wear green shoes.
That's true. Okay, yeah. Even better.
There we go.
But that will be this Sunday, March 17th. And we always like to take these holidays and look, you know, thanks to the Weather Service for providing these historical recaps of kind of the extremes that we've seen for temperatures and precipitation for St. Patrick's Day. So Bowling Green, so this Sunday, I don't really see us breaking any of these records. Just looking at it real quick.
And looking at the records, it looks like a lot of these were set way back in the day, like a century ago. So I don't think we're ever going to be getting close, at least not this year.
See, the most recent was 1958, and that was for snow, and I don't see snow coming our way either.
Nope.
So I think a lot of these are going to stand, but the warmest temperature looks like you mentioned, not even this century, 1894 with a high of 86 degrees. That's that's a pretty toasty.
That is a little toasty.
Those are like the average highs for the middle of summer. That's pretty warm. And that would also translate to the highest average temperature, which is the average of the high and the low of that day. That was also 1894. With an average of 70.5. That's, man.
Yeah, so it's a warm overnight, warm day, warm overall.
And then same situation for lowest temperature, lowest average temperature. That was 1900 with a coldest temperature of 16 degrees. And then that daily average was 27.5.
Too cold for the middle of March.
Now, kind of surprising that with all the rain that we've seen these last several weeks that we aren't in jeopardy of breaking a rain record.
Yeah.
I don't even think, maybe a slight isolated shower just peeking ahead at the forecast. So, that's, I don't think we're going to be breaking any record for historical St. Patrick's Day, but that is 2 inches of rain in 1919 here in Bowling Green. Then already mentioned the snow from 1958, an inch, and the deepest snow cover was 2 inches in 1960, so... Yeah, I guess kind of glad. I mean, maybe the warm side of it people might want, but man, 86, I wouldn't necessarily want to break that, at least this time of the year. No. There's an appropriate time and place for all warm and cold temperatures. If they happen in their respective seasons, I'm okay with it. But 86
in March. See, I like my warmth. You know, I probably wouldn't be upset if we had an 86 day in March, but... it would be a little out of character. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm happy, you know, right now as we're recording this, we're looking at temperatures in the 70s. That's great, I feel like, for
and
March.
I guess the other positive is that we probably wouldn't be dealing with the humidity that comes with the
warmth. That's
true. So it would probably be a very comfortable 86 degrees in March. So maybe I take that back. Maybe it wouldn't be too bad to deal with the 80s in March. I actually had that question yesterday. If you've been watching our newscast, Matt Foster has gone to Texas to cover the Hilltoppers in their Conference USA tournament. And he was asking me, he was comparing the weather here. It was actually, at least one day, I can't remember, it was going to be colder in Texas than it was going to be here.
Oh.
But I think it was that same storm system that they got the cold front first.
Right, and then it
hit
us.
And then we get it the day after. So
that makes sense.
I think that was the difference there. But he saw our forecast for the 70s, and he asked me, how humid do you think that's going to be? And I was like, it's not going to be unbearable, but you might notice it a little bit just because of the moisture in the area.
Yeah.
But I said, it's not that summertime. He made the comment like, oh, we're not too far away. It's going to arrive and then bam, it's going to be with us for months. So I was like, yep, we're getting closer. But this is a tolerable warm up. So I'd be okay with 80s in March, I think.
Changing your answer there.
Yes. I'm walking back on my steps, I guess. But some spring temperatures as we approach the first start of spring. It's not going to be quite as warm than what we saw earlier in the week and what we're seeing as we record this podcast. So we can listen back at a later date and kind of remember this day because it is going to get a little cooler. But not terrible, really. And that's kind of the theme that I think, as we get closer and closer to spring, and then obviously further into the warmer months, that you know, these cool downs aren't going to be as, I don't want to say, I guess as harsh as what, you know, the cool downs that we saw in February were going from the 70s to the 30s, and we're not going to be seeing that at least high temperatures in the 30s. We'll have some lows in the 30s, but...
Yeah, we're not quite done with those freezing temperatures yet.
Don't get too comfortable with these 70s.
Right, exactly. Well, going into the forecast, depending on when you're watching this, or listening to this, I should say. See, I'm used to TV, too.
I know.
Yeah. Well, this is posted on Thursday. If you're listening to this right away, then we are looking at those temperatures being in the mid-70s, and we are also tracking that potential for possibly severe storms for Thursday afternoon and evening. What kind of depends on that is if the atmosphere destabilizes enough. So if you start to see some sunshine, that's kind of an indicator, too, that the atmosphere would destabilize enough to start popping off some of those more stronger to severe thunderstorms. Mm-hmm. So just, I guess, a quick little weather lesson in there, too.
Slide down in.
Yeah. but then a cold front follows that for Thursday evening into Thursday night, and then we will be cooling back down to below average temperatures right around those lower 50s, and overnights right around that freezing mark in the lower 30s. But the good news is we should be pretty decently dry, maybe an isolated shower on Friday, and then also on Sunday, but for the most part, seeing a decent amount of sunshine throughout the weekend and into next week. And the good news is it looks like we should be warming back up to those seasonal averages in the upper 50s by the middle towards the end of next week.
So again, not too bad.
Right.
And this is the conversation I have every day with Brady from Woohoo 107. He's, you know, always telling me, it's going to get cooler, but as he always says, it could be worse, and we've seen worse. So
it's true.
The glass is half full, as always, in our forecast, I think.
Yeah. I mean, 50's a little cool, but I don't, like you said, it's not bad. I mean, the average is supposed to be upper 50s, but we'll just disregard
thing.
That.
Along with the sunset sunrise times, our average.
Oh, they have been climbing so bad.
I didn't realize how fast it was until, you know, like I said, I update these various graphics that we use, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, tomorrow starts an average of 59, and then, you know, by the end of the week, we'll be an average of, we should be at 60 degrees.
So I know. I always, in one of my graphics, I always update the average low, and, I've got in such the habit of winter, it never really changed that much for, like, a couple weeks, and then, you know, and so I'm used to, like, not really checking it, like, once a week, and then I checked it once last week, and I checked it again this week, and I was like, oh, wow, it went up like 3 degrees. So I felt a little bit behind on that, but now I'm checking it more frequently.
Yeah, it's like you said, it jumps really quick. Once we hit the start to gradually get a little bit warmer, closer to the, you know, the start of spring, I've noticed, like, these last couple weeks, it's been, man, not as drastic as, you know, 2 degrees every day,
exactly.
Like the sunrise, but it has definitely been noticeable. But,
I've also noticed the birds starting to sing a little bit more and stuff. So
I heard that
nice.
The other morning when I woke up, and I was like, wait a minute, it's not officially spring yet, but hey.
Yeah.
And I've even saw some trees on my way into work recently. Those have been, some of them are starting to bud a little bit. And,
that's nice.
You know, of course, we've had a lot of rain, too. So,
that's
true. Everybody's flowers are kind of...
Yes. And I think we are actually probably starting to have some more birds because I forgot about this, but I just remembered we have our full worm moon coming up also on our spring equinox. So a lot of things happening that day.
Could be a crazy day.
So we are looking at that is going to be our last super moon, I believe. Yeah, it's going to be the final supermoon, and it is going to be the closest full moon to Earth in March.
Oh.
So it's going to be bigger and brighter.
Going out with a bang, I guess.
Yeah, and it's funny. It's been 40 years almost. So 1981 was the last time when we had the full worm moon on the same day as the equinox, I believe.
Wow, okay. A little bit of history there.
Yes, and a fun fact why it's called the worm moon is because that is apparently when earthworms begin to emerge again. And then, okay. you know, you got the roots from the trees and plants starting to push up. And that's also when the birds start to come out. It's a sign of Earth's rebirth after its winter slumber.
Interesting.
Yes.
I will say I noticed the other day, you know, usually it's, you see them a lot, like when it is raining or just finished raining.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I see a lot. But I was walking my dog the other night and I noticed, you know, it was completely dry and hadn't recently had rain. And I saw a couple of worms on the sidewalk. Like, and I'm like, I was confused, but now that you say this, I'm like, okay, maybe this is why.
Yeah.
They're sensing that
they're cute.
The earth is blooming. So
right. You know, I haven't seen any worms yet this season, so
yeah.
I'll have to look out.
It's like, almost like with the trees budding, it's been warmer recently, maybe they're kind of confused, but
yeah.
I know you always have to watch out for the what do they call it, like the fake spring, you know, we'll have another big
right.
cool down or a freeze, and then we'll go into the real spring. But,
yeah.
All this talk about warmer weather and spring and a lot of the daylight brings our, I guess, kind of a hybrid question segment this week, because it's kind of a question but also a topic to discuss. I was asked about it this past weekend, and then you, when we were planning this week's show, we were talking about, you know, why don't we discuss this as well. So I think... I've seen a lot of on the cancel it side on my friend list on social media, but we're talking about daylight saving time. Should we discontinue it? Should we not? What are our thoughts on? And that was really the question that I got. I don't know if anybody's talked to you about it, but the question to me was, it was a guy from my church, actually, and he came up and, you know, specifically asked, what do meteorologists, how do they feel about this? And I was like, first, there's a lot of pressure. I'm like, well, I can't talk for all meteorologists. Like, I'm sure we all, like every human being, we all have our opinions. But it's, you know, I guess historically, you know, it kind of leans towards the agriculture side of why this was developed, you know, so
right.
during the planting, I guess, and then the harvest, that you have longer daylight later so farmers can work on it. And I don't think it's so much, at least for me, I don't think it's more of if we should get rid of it because there's, you know, not as many farm families or as many farmers as there used to be. My thing, thinking of it, is I think with all the technology that we have nowadays, like I see all the time in the spring and summer, you know, after the sun goes down, just the advance in equipment where, you know, these are a lot of the big tractors, you know, have their own lights
right.
on them. You know, I've driven by fields, I remember last year, countless times and saw, you know, a bunch
mm-hmm.
of tractors out there doing their work after the sun had gone down with either big spotlights that they set up or just the headlights on the equipment that they had. So I feel like, you know, that alone with equipment being more advanced now, they can work later.
Right.
So, you know, mine, again, not necessary because, you know, obviously farming is very important for us. You know, we get our dairy products from farms. We get our food, our meat from farms. So they do serve a big purpose. So I don't think it's the issue of we don't, or at least for me, just because I don't know, maybe I'm kind of biased. I don't know. But that it's less farmers. I just think, you know, with the equipment that they have, I don't think there's a need for daylight saving in that respect because they have the option or, you know, some have the capability to continue working after the sun had gone down. But
yeah,
this is kind of interesting. I know a lot of people, I don't know, everybody that I've seen, there's a couple, I won't say names, obviously, but there's a couple on my friends' list on social media who have just, I mean, raw anger for daylight saving time, and they just don't want to see it. They keep saying, you know, it's outdated, why do we use this, we don't need this, but they don't really give their reason why.
Yeah.
Not. So I can't really answer for at least the people that I know. I just know that people don't like it.
I
but
think
then it's
just
what
because
side
you
do you
lose
want.
That hour of sleep,
yeah.
I think is why people don't like it. And then, you know, you're out of whack for a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, yeah, I mean, the whole reason why it was developed was to help farmers and things like that. And as you said, they have had a lot of improvements. But I'd be curious, my grandparents, they're farmers. So I might go
mm-hmm.
and ask them what their thoughts are on
yeah.
daylight saving time to see if they still like it or if they don't really care about it too much, if it doesn't really impact them anymore.
Yeah. I feel like my grandparents, of course, they've kind of wind down. They kind of grow for just themselves now. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, they give some of their produce to us as a family. But, I mean, you know, when I was growing up, it was, I mean, they had a huge amount of land that they would grow and they'd sell in their community and things like that. But I feel like they would always stop working by, like, before dinner time because he would always, you know, my grandpa would always work in the field, come mm-hmm. down for lunch, go back in the field.
Yep.
And he'd be done by dinner. So, you know, obviously in the summertime, dinner time, there's still, you know, a couple, 2 to 3 hours left of sunlight. But obviously, so I feel like they never even really used the the sun to as their clock, I guess. They would just, you know, dinner time, I'm going to stop.
I guess it depends on the type of season. Like, I know my grandpa, whenever it was planting season mm-hmm. or harvesting season, then he would go by the sun. And he's like, up before the sun is up, and then he'll eat his breakfast, and then he'll go out to the field, like you said, come back for noon. Mm-hmm. He'll always watch the new news
yep.
and eat mm-hmm. a little lunch, and then he'll go back out. And then when it gets dark, then he would come back into the house. But in general, like, you know, during summer while things are planting and stuff, yeah, I don't think that they really use the whole day to, you know, daylight
yeah.
to daylight hours, just because there's not, I mean, there's still stuff to do in the field, but there's not as much tedious work, I guess.
Right, yeah. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I have a feeling what the side of the fence that most people would be on, but I was going to say, you know, if we're going to stop doing it, are we going to fall back permanently or spring forward permanently? I think a lot of states
right.
are saying, you know, like they're proposing, I can't remember how many states, but there are a lot of states who are proposing, you know, the end as like right now. So we spring forward and then just pass legislation that you don't have to change the clock anymore. So they would always be in daylight saving time. And I feel like that'd be most, because if you think about it, you know, you're still going to have the early sunset times,
yeah.
and less daylight in the winter. But, you know, here, for example, in central time, I feel like people would be, you know, more in favor of a 5:30
right.
sunset as opposed to the 4:30 sunset. But, you know, does that make that big of a difference? But, you know, I feel like most people would be in favor of the staying on, I guess that would be standard time.
Yeah.
Or daylight time. I guess it would be daylight time if it's daylight saving time.
Yeah.
That's always confusing.
Yeah, that's always
I just forecast the weather.
But see, for me, being a meteorologist, our models,
yeah, that's
the time that they come in based on our show times, again, mm-hmm. this has to be with being in central time, but mm-hmm. I would prefer us to fall back and then stay
yeah.
falling back. So I guess daylight saving time ends. Which I guess, hey, that could make sense. You start it when daylight saving time ends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, from a weather standpoint, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
You know, I think the general public, it's disrupted their sleep, you know, their, mm-hmm. their daily function. For us, it's completely thrown off, like, my workflow schedule.
Right.
I'm like, oh, the model should be coming in right now. It's an hour later. Now what do I do?
And then you're like, you know, right up to the edge of when the show starts.
Yep.
So looking at those latest models. And
it does keep me busy during the show. I'll say that. Because the other side of it was I was busy up to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the show started, I had already had my graphics updated. So it was just kind of, you know, preparing to go on air, literally. And now it's kind of waiting a little bit before the show. And then during, for me in the evening, it's like, oh, I got to, like, keep updating the model. But then I got to go do the weather, come back to my desk and do that, and then go back and do it. Like, so it's a little bit more hectic now than without. You know,
See, I like having more organized where I can look at the models, prep the show,
exactly,
do the show,
yeah.
and then, you know, not have to worry about trying to update the models as you're doing the show.
But like I said, I don't know where, I know people are against it, but I don't know what exactly their angst is and what exactly they want out of it. So
yeah.
maybe that's a good opportunity to have a discussion with us. So in addition to any weather questions you have, how about people send us their thoughts on daylight saving time?
Yeah,
that'd
I like
be good.
That.
So I'd like to hear what you have to say.
And also, send us your dog pictures.
Yes, we're very excited.
So we are starting something new with our dog walkers forecast
mm-hmm.
in the mornings. If you join me at 6 a.m., your pet might be featured starting, oh, let's see. I had the date here. I believe it is March 25th.
Okay.
Monday, March 25th, that is our goal for when we're going to launch this, but we're going to work on creating a new graphic. I've already made a mock-up of that graphic, and we are going to be featuring your pet
mm-hmm.
And we're your dog, because it is a dog walker's forecast.
Right.
And yeah, so it'll be great. I'm doing some, I think, cute little things with it. But yeah, we need to get an archive of pet photos,
yeah.
so please email those to weather@wnky.com along with your thoughts on daylight saving time
right.
and any topic suggestions or other questions that you might have for us.
That's right. We can always use, there's no such thing as too much material. I guess,
right.
of course, if we go over the hour mark sometime in our podcast, that could be maybe considered too much. But,
well, then we could break it up between a couple
exactly.
weeks maybe.
That's good. So by next week's show, we can we'll be fully into the official equinox, the official start of spring.
Yes.
So I'm sure we'll have a deluge of topics to discuss next week, maybe. I don't know. But we can always use your help. So again, weather at WNKY.com for weather questions, topic suggestions, and now dog photos. I'm so excited.
I'm very excited. I love seeing those pictures. I know a bunch of people have already sent them in. Mm-hmm. I love seeing those puppy photos. And
yes.
Yeah, it's going to
be
fun.
All we need is the, obviously the photo, but the dog's name.
We need the dog's name,
the
owner's name, and then obviously the dog's photo.
Mm-hmm.
A little preview to the graphic without giving too much away. I'm making it so it's kind of like your pet is saying the forecast.
Right, yes.
So make your pet a quick, give them their 15 seconds of fame on TV.
So can't wait for that. Again, tentatively set for the 25th to start that. So that's what we're looking at for the next week. But,
yeah, that's our next big launch in the weather department. But
In terms of this episode, be sure if you're listening to share this link wherever you're listening at with your friends on social media. Get the word out, and again, send us those questions and topic suggestions for next week's episode or future episodes as well. But I think that'll wrap up episode 25.
I think so too.
Like
already
it.
At that quarter century mark.
I know. Again, we'll be posting on social media likely before next week about what we'll be talking about. But if not, just be on the lookout for new episodes every Thursday on Woohoo 107's website. Also, the websites for Willie Country and Beaver FM. And again, that'll do it for this week's episode of WNKY Weather Weekly. I'm meteorologist Cody Bailey.
And I'm meteorologist Christy Stewart.
Thank you for listening and have a fantastic week.